Growing up, writer Rod Dreher dreamed of escaping his small town in rural Louisiana. Once he was old enough, he hightailed it out of there, moved to the East Coast, became a film and culture critic, and wound up writing for places like the New York Post and the National Review. And then he had a crisis of faith. Priest abuse scandals in the Catholic Church shattered his sense of safety. He spoke to Steve Paulson about the psychic shock of losing his religion and the series of events that in the end sent him back home to St. Francisville, Louisiana, searching for forgiveness.
It was the most painful thing I've ever experienced, and I'm someone who in recent years buried his younger sister and his father, yet nothing was as painful as losing my Catholic faith. I had come into the Catholic Church in my mid-20s after a period of strong agnosticism. I had a pretty profound conversion. This was in the 1990s. What changed for me was being in New York City at the New York Post and beginning to write in the early 2000s about the Catholic sex abuse scandal. I was writing about it before things broke big out of Boston, but certainly the Boston catastrophe ramped things up greatly.
Where they basically tried to cover it up.
Exactly. And it's not so much for me the priest who actually committed the abuse as it was bishops and other clerics within the Catholic institution that turned a blind eye to it and ground families and victims under their boots. I ended up leaving the Catholic Church, became Eastern Orthodox, but for me, it was not a matter of I'm going to leave this wicked institution and go to a pure one. I don't think there is any pure one, and the Orthodox Church has problems too. But what the difference was, I had been really broken by my own intellectual pride, and I had thought that as long as I kept all the syllogisms clear in my mind about why the Catholic Church is the true faith, then my inner self was a fortress that could never be breached. I was wrong.
But there were a lot of Catholics who said that Christians have a duty to forgive, and that being a good Catholic meant that you had to let go of the anger and move on, as opposed to just renouncing the church. And I'm wondering why you didn't buy that argument.
Well, I bought it in my head. I knew that it is not the case that the sins of the bishops or the priests negate the truths that the church proclaims. But for me, my Catholicism was so much stuck in my head. And so when it came time to forgive, when I heard that you must forgive, I interpreted that as the bishops and those who apologized for them using the very precious Christian teaching of forgiveness as a way to avert justice. You know, I think you have to forgive to get rid of the anger and to make the way clear for healing. But I saw very little repentance or any real intention of doing justice in the Catholic Church on the part of the Catholic institution. So for me, this call to forgiveness was what Dietrich Bonhoeffer called cheap grace.
Do you think there are certain acts that are just simply beyond forgiveness? They should not be forgiven?
No, I can't say that as a Christian. I don't believe that because if I said that, I would be condemning myself. But I do believe that forgiveness, for it to be an effective thing, it has to have repentance involved as well. And we have to seek justice as much as we possibly can, realizing that there's no such thing as perfect justice in this world. And, you know, in my own personal case, I had to come to reckon with that in my own family. And I had to learn how to forgive my own father, even though I saw in him no repentance for the wrongs he had done. Yet I had to love him anyway.
And why did you have to forgive your father? What was going on there?
Well, back in the end of 2011, after my younger sister Ruthie died, my wife and I felt that we needed to move from Philadelphia back to my hometown in Louisiana, a little town called St. Francisville, to care for my parents and to help care for my sister's children. And I took it as sort of a return of the prodigal son. I had moved away from this town.
You become this big success, and you know, yeah. the local boy has done good.
Right. But as far as my father was concerned, he was the quintessential old Southern country gentleman. He thought that he was the center of the world and life in our small town was the center of the world. And I had been disloyal by leaving it. I was his only son. And you know, for a Southern man of his generation, that counted for something. So I came back and I thought he would receive me, but As it turned out, he didn't receive me because he resented that I wasn't like him.
So you went back wanting to mend fences, and it actually made it worse then.
Yeah. Oh, no, it did. And this rejection just tore me to bits. I got physically ill. I fell into a deep depression. And around that time, too, I stumbled into the Divine Comedy of Dante Alighieri, and that helped me. But
reading Dante helped you deal with father?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, strangely enough, I tell you, it was unmasking things within me, flaws within myself, brokenness within myself that I had not dealt with.
Give me an example. I mean, what did you get from reading Dante's Divine Comedy that actually sort of applied to your own life?
Oh, what didn't I get? There's a part in the Inferno when Dante, the pilgrim Dante, is walking with Virgil through a cemetery in hell. And, he passes by an open tomb, flames coming out of the tomb, and out of this open grave and amid the fire rises this incredibly arrogant Florentine aristocrat named Farinata. So he says, "I hear the voice of a Tuscan passing. Come closer. Let me see if you're worth talking to." I said, "Oh, this is going to be great." So in the poem, the pilgrim Dante and Farinata start arguing back and forth about Florence and politics in Florence, and they start trash-talking each other. And I'm reading this thinking, Dante, walk away from this guy. He's dead. He's in hell. He thinks he's still back in Florence where he matters. Then it occurred to me, this is me and my dad. My father is still stuck on the glories of our family and the glories of our place here in the deep South. He doesn't see what's happening around him, but that's where he is. I can't move him, but I am like Dante the Pilgrim. I can walk away and refuse to be bound by this conversation.
So to bring this back to our earlier discussion about forgiveness, it sounds like you had to figure out how to forgive your father, and maybe he had to figure out how to forgive you. I don't know if he felt like he had to go there or not.
No, he didn't. And that's one of the things that drove me crazy. And I was still so filled with anger after I had that moment, that epiphany, and went to confession. I still had a lot of anger because I was dealing with him on an almost daily basis. And just the hard-headedness of my dad, who was really, I mean, he was a confessing Christian, but he was far more stoic than Christian. And he just had to be right about everything. And
he didn't feel any need to have to ask for forgiveness.
No.
He was on the right side of everything.
Of course he was. He was Farinata. He was a Farinata of the Bayou. And I would go to my priest and I would confess anger over and over. And he said, "What do you want?" I said, "Well, I want justice." He said, "What does love know of justice?" And he explained to me, he said, "Look, you may never get justice from your father. Your father may never love you like you think he ought to love you, but that doesn't release you from the obligation to love him." My priest said, "I'm not telling you to overlook what he's done, because he has done you wrong, but you still have to find a way to love him."
And did you? Did you get rid of the anger towards your father?
Well, yes and no. I mean, things did get better. As it happened, on the day before Good Friday, 2015, my dad asked me to take him to the next town over to get a haircut. We were driving home, and he said, "You know, I think that I'm nearing the end of my life." And I said, "Well, Daddy, is there anything you want me to do for you? Can I call somebody, an old friend? Is there someone you need to forgive, or is there someone you need to ask forgiveness of?" He said, "Well, I've never done anything wrong in my life." I looked at him like, "You're 81 years old and you can say that?" Because he was a smart, smart man, but a prideful one. And so we started arguing again. And when I dropped him off at his house, I thought, you know, that was stupid of me. I'm expecting too much of him. I should have never have brought it up. Well, the next morning I went over there, Steve. This is Good Friday morning. He was on home hospice care at that point, and he had too many medications to handle himself, so I did it for them. I found him on his front porch, sitting in his rocking chair, drinking his coffee, reading his morning paper there in the country, and I kissed him on the cheek, wished him good morning, ran in, did his pills for him, came out and said, "I'm in a hurry. I've got a lot of work to do today." He grabbed my arm, Steve, and I looked down at him, and that old man, there were tears in his eyes. And my dad is not one who cried, but there were tears in his eyes, and his chin was quivering, and he said to me, "I spent a long time talking to the Lord last night about my transgressions against you, and I told him how sorry I was. I think he heard me." It took so much for him to do that, make that simple apology. And I kissed my dad, accepted what he said, and then went about my business. But I thought the rest of the day, if I had not come home and walked through this own personal inferno and purgatorio of my family, I would never have been there to hear my dad say those words. And I was so grateful because when my dad died later that summer, I was able to spend the last 8 days of his life caring for him, praying with him and for him, giving him his medication, and just being there with him so that when he breathed his last, I was holding his hand. And the only way that I had found that sort of peace that passes all understanding in his death was by forgiveness.
Journalist Rod Dreher. His latest book is The Benedict Option. He talked to Steve Paulson.